Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Invez podcast. I am your host, head of research here at Invez, Dan Ashmore. And today we're joined by Wade Gunther, who is partner at Wilshire Phoenix, an asset management firm. How are you doing today, Wade?
Doing well. Thanks, Dan, for having us. We're excited to be here. We love the podcast, and this is a great one. So we appreciate you having us on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So we're going to chat about Bitcoin right now and a bit of Bitcoin mining, you know, investing across the space. Obviously, it's all gone a bit haywire. We're recording this on June 7th, I think. Let me check the date, but it's the Wednesday. Anyway, it's the previous 2 days, SEC have come after Binance and Coinbase, so the market's all kind of wacky. So we're going to talk about a series of things. But firstly, before we get into it, give us a little intro about yourself and Wilshire Phoenix and how you guys are connected to crypto.
Sure. Oh, myself, I am from Canada, and I have spent a lot of my career in the ETF side of the business, mainly as a portfolio manager, working on covered call strategies, the leverage inverse strategies, just running funds. And I moved to the US late in 2016. And I joined Wilshire Phoenix in early 2021. And the firm really predicated itself on creating investment strategies that retail investors really had an appetite for, but were mainly available at the institutional level. So my other partners, Bill Herman and Will Kai, they thought, like, look, let's create these strategies so that every investor can have access to these once reserved products for institutional, make them available to everybody. So continuing on with the history of Wilshire Phoenix, 2018 is when the firm started, and the other partners went on the route of, let's try and launch a spot Bitcoin ETF in the United States, because they didn't have one, and went through the process with the SEC and spent a lot of time in Washington. And the SEC was like, look, we're just not doing a spot Bitcoin ETF. So that was the end of that. And other ETF sponsors have also gotten the same message. So fast forward a little bit, 2020 is when we started to go a different route and work on a spot Bitcoin fund through the IPO process. So we are still in that process, and that's Wilshire Phoenix, and that's where we are right now.
Okay, so let's dig a little more into that. I think a lot of people get, you know, what a spot Bitcoin ETF is, and yeah, like you say, there's been a load of them trying to get approved over the years that hasn't happened. But so you're saying you're going via the fund IPO route. Can you elaborate a little bit on what exactly that means?
Right. So it's essentially, it's not an ETF where there's daily creations and redemptions, but this is more of an IPO, essentially like a closed-end fund that trades on an exchange, almost like a stock, but more shares can be issued if demand warrants it. And then there's the opportunity for investors to redeem back to the fund sponsor at NAV. So there's still that element that is similar to an ETF, but it's not exactly the same, because ETFs, as you know, have daily creations and daily redemptions. And this one just doesn't have this fund is not structured the same way as an ETF is.
Okay, it's a pure Bitcoin play, right? It's just purely on the, you're not, because I know that there's a similar products that go, you know, via proxy plays, whether that's like mining companies or other holding companies, or but this is pure Bitcoin,
right? The fund is designed to hold spot Bitcoin, and that's it. It's not a proxy. It's not a mining company. It's not a futures based. It's not like that.
Cool. Interesting. Let's talk mining here for a bit, because I know you have covered this and you've got some opinions in the area. One question that comes up over and over again, and it's something I sort of wonder as well, and it's different for different kinds of investors, but why exactly would someone invest in a mining stock over Bitcoin?
Well, okay, there's a lot of advantages to doing it, right? Because, okay, so let's just go back and what is considered a Bitcoin proxy or like a mining fund? It's something that could be an equity or something or a single stock that either mines Bitcoin or has Bitcoin on the balance sheet. Or, I mean, I guess if we're just talking about miners, then that kind of covers it. And I think some of the advantages are ease of access, right? Because a lot of these Bitcoin mining companies are already exchange traded, right? So investors can just go through their brokerage account and purchase these equity companies that have Bitcoin on their balance sheet, and they're essentially can act as a proxy and really it's easy to get. Versus say spot Bitcoin, an investor would need a separate ID, a password, and a crypto wallet on another exchange in order to do so. Might be a little bit cumbersome or intimidating for a lot of investors, and they don't want to do that. Another reason why I think that investors may go the mining route is custody, right? Again, with a lot of the exchange-traded Bitcoin miners, custody is the same as the equities in an investor's brokerage account. But custody for spot Bitcoin has generally been on the exchange that the transaction occurs on, right? So if it's Coinbase, you buy your Bitcoin, the Bitcoin generally stays there unless you pull it into cold storage in your own offline wallet. Again, that might be something that people just don't know how to do, don't want to do, and it might be a little bit cumbersome. Another reason we can think of is reporting. Again, with these with the miners, they are subject to regulations if they're exchange traded. And they have certain reporting requirements, and they give a lot of transparency on what's happening under the hood of their company. However, Bitcoin, we know what it is. It's a decentralized cryptocurrency that is owned by everybody, and there's no central authority that requires any reporting whatsoever. So, and then I think the last thing I can think of is regulation. Again, with the Bitcoin miners, if they're exchange traded, and if it's say either an equity or a fund structure, there is just going to be in the US anyway, there's going to be SEC regulations that are going to have to be followed with their exchange listing, or if it's in a fund structure, 33 or 40 Act, and they require SEC reporting and adhering to regulations. And again, spot Bitcoin doesn't have a central authority for that. So there's a lot of reasons why we think that some investors may pick the mining route versus spot Bitcoin.
And just on your final point there, regulation, because obviously this is the huge story. I mean, this week is when they've come after Coinbase and Binance formally, but it's kind of been going on all year. And you know, it's been a huge regulatory clampdown in the US. Do you think, like looking at Bitcoin so far, it's had a great year. I think it's up 60-odd%. And even in the last few days, it's been relatively steady. Like it fell 5% when the Binance news came out. And then it's kind of bounced back up since, and it's traded pretty flat. Do you fear that the overall regulatory picture worsening is going to have a negative impact on these Bitcoin mining stocks or Bitcoin itself, or both or neither? Like what are your thoughts there? Do you think that the picture going forward is getting murkier for these companies?
I don't think so. Okay. My sentiment is this: Bitcoin essentially drives the miners' bus, right? And I feel like this is the same with most miners and their underlying. If you look at gold miners and gold, generally, whatever happens to gold, the miners, their performance somewhat follows in tandem. We just find that gold miners often underperform gold because there's these layers of management inefficiencies. They have shareholders to repay. They have debts to repay. They have equipment to manage, people, and they still, there's uncertainty on how much gold they can yield out of the ground. And really, this is, the parallels are very similar with Bitcoin. So however Bitcoin goes, it seems like the miners are really going to follow suit. And again, they have overhead, they have hardware to buy, they have people to manage, and they have to do it with energy costs that they really are probably eating away at most of the profit. So the regulatory situation, I don't really see it as affecting the miners or really Bitcoin. I think it just, the regulatory framework is really going to affect the companies that, like, say Coinbase or Binance, when the SEC comes out and says, hey, these are considered securities, then those companies who are trading those now securities have to pivot and adjust to what those regulations are. The underlying Bitcoin really has no effect. It's like Apple comes out with bad earnings for some reason, and then it doesn't mean that phones or tablets are any less useful. In that kind of analogy.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. So what about like energy costs? Because that's been another huge story over the last 18 months now. You know, we've come out of pandemic, we've seen huge inflation. You know, we've had massive amounts of money printing. We've seen supply chain issues out of COVID. And then obviously the Russian war is one of the biggest factors for energy specifically. And we've seen electricity costs all across the world, you know, spike north. And this is obviously, like, we can talk about regulation having, you know, knock-on or secondary effects on the whole industry, but energy costs are the direct input in this whole Bitcoin mining process. So, like, miners are getting squeezed here immensely. How do you see this playing out going forward? And do you think this is the biggest problem facing these miners?
Energy costs, in my opinion, I think it's one of the biggest challenges for the miners. Right, they're trying everything in order to be a little more sustainable. There is, I think, CleanSpark here in the U.S. They're trying to get to an energy neutral or a carbon neutral footprint by moving operations towards. I'm sorry, I'm just like looking around here because I'm trying to think what's going on with them. Is they're moving to places where there's like waterfalls in upstate New York in order to harness energy from there to use in their Bitcoin mining and make it a little bit more cost effective, because it's far and away the most expensive input variable to mining Bitcoin than anything else. So I think once they get that under control and reduce the overall cost to mine per unit of Bitcoin, then I think you'll see miner profitability start to go up.
So what I've always found interesting is that Bitcoin mining is location agnostic. So theoretically, you can move it anywhere. And like this has, you know, implications for like excess energy, using it on the grid and stuff. And, you know, when people criticize miners for using, you know, mammoth amount of energy, that's often a point that goes back against them. My question here is, like, do you think, like, US are generally pretty low electricity costs when you compare it to a lot of, certainly developed nations anyway, but there are countries with lower cost. Do you see mining, like, where do you think mining will be centered going forward? Do you think there'll always be a mining industry in the US, or will it inevitably just go to wherever electricity costs are cheaper?
That's a great question. I mean, short, medium term, I can see miners being a little bit more nimble and going and following the energy cost pattern. We see that with just regular businesses here in the U.S. Hey, if state and local taxes are too high and we don't see them turning around, then we'll move our facilities to another state or potentially another country and do business that way. I can see miners, as you said, like, they're agnostic to location. If there's a benefit to a lower cost benefit to moving elsewhere. But we're just talking about some of the bigger names who have decided to stay here in the US and have a very robust setup that is probably a little more difficult to move than say an individual who has a half decent mining rig in their house or in their backyard or something like that. We're talking about very massive mining pools that are might be a little bit too difficult to move. So they're going to set up operations in the cheapest or the best way they can to get the lowest cost, lowest energy cost to mine.
Okay, so we've talked, cost, energy cost, location, and obviously on the revenue side of it, these miners are getting paid in Bitcoin, and this whole thing, with costs and your costs are in energy, which have spiked up immensely in the last year, and Bitcoin is your revenue, which has come down a lot. Like this has put miners under a lot of pressure. Rising costs and falling revenue are the deathbed of any business, so it's been tough. But going forward, where do you see these companies? Like you've studied, you're in portfolio management. You've studied these Bitcoin mining stocks. Like, do you think it's a good time to get in now? Or I see it's a tough question because you've got to kind of predict the whole. It's so predicated on the Bitcoin age, so you've got to predict that as well. But what do you think about the valuation of these companies right now?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot to unpack when you ask that, and each company is going to be different, right? It's difficult to say. So if you want to look at, okay, this isn't a mining company, but MicroStrategy, for example.
Right.
I think MicroStrategy has often been a proxy for Bitcoin just because they hold, I don't know, I think like 140,000 Bitcoins at an acquisition cost of somewhere like around 29,000. So if we want to go back to mining companies, they're going to have a mining acquisition cost of an X dollar, and they are mining Bitcoin, but they still have expenses to pay. They have management, they have overhead. A lot of them have leases. Some of them are doing the best they can by purchasing the land and buildings themselves so that they don't have to have those additional expenses. So to say, oh, what is the valuation of these companies is very difficult because each one is different and on a case-by-case basis. Are they still decent proxies for Bitcoin? Sure. As long as they're holding Bitcoin on their balance sheet, then that makes sense. But it's really hard to value each individual company without taking a very deep look at their balance sheets.
That's a pretty sensible answer. But let me ask you, when you say like as long as they're holding Bitcoin on their balance sheet, they're a good proxy for Bitcoin, which makes perfect sense. Do you think it's wise that they hold? Because for me, and perhaps I'm being super ignorant here, but when I look at it, I'm like, it confused me a little bit when these companies do hold Bitcoin, because the way I see it as an outsider, I'm like, okay, your business is already so tethered to the fate of Bitcoin. You're going to go up if Bitcoin goes up, or you're going to go down if Bitcoin goes down. Now, obviously, you've got other things like overheads and the specifics of your business, like you just said, but you're very sensitive to the price of Bitcoin. Why would companies hold Bitcoin on their balance sheet then and heighten up that risk? Or is it just, a matter of just having such high conviction in the industry that they just want to go all in?
Hey, look, I'm with you. I wouldn't hold Bitcoin on my balance sheet if I was a miner, just because of that massive concentration risk that you're talking about. If Bitcoin really has a bad year, guess what? Your business is probably going to have a really bad year too. Now, I think why they would hold it is, you're right, like they might have conviction on the future price of Bitcoin, and they're essentially just hoarding or stashing until they see a more favorable price. But they're also, they are very aware of the exact price per Bitcoin that they mine for. And most miners are not going to sustain selling at prices below their mining costs. That's just bad business, right? Like, you're not going to mine for 30,000 and sell it for 25 consistently. You might do it over a short term expecting a rebound in order to pay some bills, but long term you're going to want to be selling it for significantly more than your acquisition costs. So if the Bitcoin happens to be currently trading lower than their acquisition costs, then yeah, we can definitely see a lot of businesses, a lot of these mining companies, just hoarding and stashing for better days.
And do you guys ever consider, like you mentioned MicroStrategy there a minute ago, do you ever consider looking, or do you value other proxy investments in Bitcoin apart from mining stocks like MicroStrategy or Coinbase or whoever it may be?
Well, that's crazy because MicroStrategy has like, I think, 3.7 billion of their of Bitcoin holdings on their balance sheet, but the market cap for the company is like 3.9 billion. So essentially, if you liquidated the company, it covers the company valuation. But still, once senior creditors get paid and debts and the lawyers, will the common shareholders get fully paid out one to one at the same Bitcoin return as Bitcoin over their holding period? I don't know. It's really tough to say. So when people use MicroStrategy as a proxy, sure, but it's still a managed company by people you don't know. So, I mean, that's up to them. Coinbase, I think, is completely different. It's a good question, but it's completely different than MicroStrategy. Sure, Coinbase has some Bitcoin on their balance sheet, but not nearly to the extent that MicroStrategy has relative to their market cap. And Coinbase, I mean, we know their business model, right? They take commissions off of every trade that happens on their platform. That's an amazing business model. They're providing a service and executing trades, and a lot of them, and that's great. But to think of them as a proxy for Bitcoin, I think it's a bit of a reach, kind of like, say, Interactive Brokers being used as a proxy for the FTSE All-Share Index, just because Interactive Brokers can trade every single stock in the FTSE All-Share Index. It doesn't really line up. And I think that's where kind of Coinbase falls into that. It just doesn't, even though it's a good business and centered around crypto and they do have some Bitcoin on their balance sheet, it just doesn't align all that well.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. I remember looking at, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but when I read their filing at their IPO, I was shocked at how little Bitcoin they actually had. You know, most of these companies that are there from the early days, and I think Coinbase are, what, 2012 or something? They go way back, 2013. But yeah, I was pretty surprised at how low it was. I was just kind of referring to, like, they're so super correlated with the market. You know, if Bitcoin's doing well, they get more trades, more volume, more revenue that way. But obviously with Coinbase, you've got a whole other set of risks there, which have been made abundantly clear in the last 2 days even. And what about the wider crypto market in general then? You know, where we've come through this pretty ferocious bear market where Bitcoin touched 68,000, went all the way down to 15,000. Whether we're still in the bear market at the moment, I don't really know. But, you know, it's up 60-odd% on the year. Coming to the end of this monetary tightening cycle, it's a very funny time in the economy at large. Where do you see crypto going from here?
I mean, we generally don't like to forecast Bitcoin prices. We're just firm believers in Bitcoin as a cryptocurrency, as a tool for furthering decentralized finance as an overall industry. We love it, and we're agnostic on its direction. One thing we will say, though, is after all the bad news in 2022, and sure, Bitcoin went down, it has somewhat recovered and given a lot of investors confidence that, hey, look, like, Bitcoin seems like it's here to stay. And even with all of the bad news, it's still been fairly resilient. And even, like you said, from the news with Coinbase and Binance, and then Bitcoin went down by like 5%, and then it's kind of come back a little bit and been a little bit flat after that. Again, it's resilient. And this goes back to my Apple analogy. It's like, okay, things happen, you know, with Apple, and they're reporting bad earnings. Doesn't mean the cell phone market is gonna die anytime soon. People are gonna still like their smartphones. And if Apple, say, can't provide it, let's say it goes out of business, then there will be other smartphone makers to come along. But the underlying technology, underlying Bitcoin, seems to be fairly resilient, and that's something that we're watching closely.
Yeah, no, the resilience has kind of surprised me as well, especially this week. I think whether that's, you know, a lot of this regulatory issues priced in already from earlier in the year, I don't know. But it's definitely notable. When you say you're kind of, you know, you've got huge conviction in Bitcoin long term, and you believe in it, and, you know, the decentralized finance quality, you're saying, are you interested in cryptos beyond Bitcoin, or is it purely Bitcoin?
We also like Ethereum because it's we look at it, Ethereum as more of a technology, almost akin to the starting of the internet on a like an e-commerce level back in the 90s. And these are the, we feel like in terms of decentralized finance and the Ethereum platform that a lot of decentralized finance applications are being built on, that it's just something that is very interesting for to us, and it's something that we're keeping a close watch on, and you know, something we might consider in the future.
All right. So that is Wade Gunther of Wilshire Phoenix. Thank you for coming on the show today, Wade. If anyone wants to check you guys out, there'll be links in the description. But yeah, thanks for dialing in.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.